Hello, and welcome to The Trumpet, the official podcast of Elephant Room Productions. As always, I am your host, Robert Gene Pelleccio, and I'm joined by not one, but two playwrights this month. One of them is our returning friend, Chris Uloth, who, as we all know, in addition to being a wonderful playwright, is also a wonderful member of our herd. Welcome back, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks.
And a first-time guest, one of the many, many wonderful playwrights in our upcoming production, Suicide Stories, Gallery of the Untold, we have David Myers. Thank you so much for coming on, David.
Thanks for having me, Robert. I'm a huge podcast fan, so whenever the opportunity arises, I'm always happy to do it.
That is the most enthusiastic plug for a podcast we have ever had on this podcast.
I will take it.
In fairness, though, we have been plugged by another podcast on another podcast, which is exciting. But this is the first plug for podcasts in general on our podcast.
That's great.
So I guess just to start the ball rolling, Chris, if you could just kind of reintroduce yourself. It's been a while since we've talked on this podcast. And if you could just talk a little bit about your role again with the company, and specifically your role with Suicide Stories.
Yeah, it has been a while, I guess, since the merry old Christmas episode.
Yes, timeline.
Well, it's great to be back. I'll short, quick introduction. I'm Chris Uloth. I have been with ERP since the beginning. I'm a co-founder, I've had various hats. Now I am our graphic web designer. I maintain that presence of ERP. Been focusing on that. And I don't know, what else, Robert?
Well, I guess I could ask what besides being a playwright, which we're going to touch on a lot this episode, what your specific role in Suicide Stories is.
Oh, right, yes, because this is Suicide related, specifically. I'm a playwright on Suicide Stories, which is honestly a great honor. When Lauren Schover first came to me with the idea, I was like, that is amazing. She had like this just vision for it, which, I was just kind of blown away by it. I was like, I'd be honored to be a part of that. And so it kind of it became something that, like, you know, I became personally invested in. One, because I have a personal connection with it, but also because I just think that I'm so fascinated by the idea of bringing all of these art mediums together and it being this multidisciplinary piece. And it's really kind of beautiful. I feel very privileged to be able to have a piece in Suicide Stories.
No, I was really excited to read it, too.
I'm writing Museum Bar. So I'm writing the piece Museum Bar, which is a two-character theatrical piece within...
Which I think is the only two-character piece, now that I think about it.
Yes, but, yes, I believe that's right.
And David, as someone new to our company, we've had people on the past few episodes. We've had Lauren, we've had Phil, we've had a lot of people talk about Suicide Stories from a production and inception standpoint. We've never actually gotten the chance until now to talk to someone who joined in once it was in development. So I guess if you could just introduce yourself. First off, can I ask you a little about your theatrical background? Are you primarily a playwright, or do you wear one of the many other hats in theater?
So I act and write.
Nice.
A play of mine just premiered outside Washington, D.C., so I've been out there for a bunch of performances, and I just tell people that acting is much more enjoyable, but, you know, in a lot of ways, writing is more rewarding. Because
that's an interesting way to look at it.
You get to put your vision out there and your thoughts out there, whereas in acting, you're just beholden to however you're cast. So Chris and I met in, and congrats on your recent nomination, Chris. It's so exciting.
Oh, shit.
Thank you.
So Chris and I met in a writing group for Project Y Theater Company, and I just loved his work, and we just got along personally, and I had a new play that I wrote, that I don't think I'm going to develop that much further. I'm already on to the next one. And he brought me into Elfin Room to do a reading of it, which was very, very helpful. And then when this came up, I got an email saying, would you be interested in being part of this project? And I would have been anyway, but yeah, the piece I'm doing is actually not an adaptation, but it's maybe it is a bit of an adaptation of a full-length play that I had done in New York 2 years ago that Chris saw, and I had an original idea for it that was never not able to come to fruition in the full-length version. So I said, man, this would be perfect if I could use it for this project. And I reached out to Chris and Lauren explaining, and they both said yes, and so here we are.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, I remember that, David. We go back kind of far, and I remember seeing that play, and when you brought up that idea, I was just like, that seems very specifically Suicide Stories. So I was glad that actually worked out. I'm really happy to be working with you, Ken.
Yes, likewise.
And I'm definitely happy to have you as well. Your piece is very visceral, very powerful. Both of yours are.
It's a little dark. So this full-length play that, you know, we just had a premiere of, is also a little heavy. Man, if you think that is dark, you should have seen this other play, because it was probably a little too dark. But
I don't know that there is such a thing in theater.
Night, someone came who was just clearly high on marijuana, and they found a lot of laughs in that show. So
I just gotta make fun. I love the university cop terminology right there. We think the suspect was high on marijuana.
The background to that is he told me that he basically smoked pot every single day.
Mm-hmm.
That he was high, but I knew marijuana was the drug of choice from his telling me that. So
beautiful. Well, I guess shifting into the specific pieces themselves, I'll ask both of you the same. David already kind of part answered this. Question was going to be how did you get involved in Suicide Stories in developing your piece? Chris, I know that we have been talking about Suicide Stories for about 3 years, but was Museum Bar always something that you wanted to put towards this, or was this a separate piece that fit together with our vision?
Yes and no. The concept, I knew that was what I would want to use in Suicide Stories. So the thing behind Museum Bar, this might be a little inside information that, you know, only podcast members will get because you won't see it on stage, but it's an adaptation of another play that I had written, which was I feel like every writer has this, you write this play and you put it out in the world and you're like, most of the time you're like, I don't know if this is any good. This is one of the ones where I was like, I really don't know if this is any good.
Let me reassure some of your doubts real quick, Chris. It is very good. Throughout the episode, obviously, I don't want to go.
Thank you, Robert, for that affirmation.
Yeah, and obviously for any playwright that's talking about Suicide Stories, until we do our retrospective episode in October, I want to be careful how much detail I give away on this, because we do want people to come in. But I can, from what I can say without giving anything about it away, the way that the characters interact, the way that even even down to how the stage directions are written, it is a very unique journey that is my style of writing. And or my style, my enjoyment, like the thing I love most about writing. It remind actually I said when we first read it in Philly, when we were doing the first round of that, when we did the first version of that was sent in, I remember distinctly comparing it to one of my favorite screenwriters, John Swartzwelder, who is, I don't know if this number is still accurate, but when I, in the mid-2000s, was, I think, one of the only writers to have written more Simpsons episodes than he is years old. And half the time, his scripts are so brilliant and absurd and specific that oftentimes the best parts of his script were in the stage directions. So much so that, especially in the early years, sometimes his stage directions would be adapted into lines in the episode because they were too brilliant to let go. And on, that's kind of the sense I got, especially with the lead character in his inner monologue. That's some of the thing I got from reading Museum Bar.
Well, thank you, Robert. That's really high praise. I appreciate that. It's kind of been like an evolving piece over the years. For a while, like, I wasn't really sure even like what medium it would be. So that kind of affected it too, its journey. So what you have here is, a culmination of a lot of maybe like, 10 years of thinking, maybe. All summed up into a short little 10-minute play.
And what about you, David? Was it a challenge, especially since you said it was from a larger piece, was it a challenge at all? And actually, this question goes again to both of you. Feel free to chime in whenever. But was it a challenge at all to adapt something that was originally from a longer form piece into something more singular and kind of set aside?
I actually had that question with Chris. Chris, was your play a full-length play, or was a short play that you are using for this?
It was, so the play that I'm using for this is a...
Well, you said it was like, you took that other play and then...
I got you. It was a one-act. Yeah.
I see. But a 10-minute one-act, or like a 40, 50?
Somewhere in between. I think it was like 3 minutes or something. Yeah.
Cool.
I might be thinking of a different one of your pieces, but was this originally conceived as a screenplay, or was this always a play?
It's had a couple of versions. I think when I started out, it was a screenplay.
Okay. Because I remember, I think you did send us one at one point. With that disclaimer saying, like, this was written as a screenplay, and it was, even though it was written in a very visual style, that wouldn't be easily adapted to the stage, it was very beautiful to read, the imagery that you were trying to put in.
Well, thank you. I'm interested, David, how was that?
It was actually a very easy process. It surprised me when I first did it. I said, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this, and spent quite a bit of time rewriting it, based on the feedback I've gotten from you guys and what I'm trying to achieve with it, to distill that message, into 10 minutes from 60-65 minutes. But it was a much easier process than I thought. I think because I worked so intensely on the original version, even though I had been away from it as a writer for about a year and a half, I just felt I knew that character and that story so well. So I usually never act in my plays, but this is actually the only play of mine that I've ever acted in when we did it in New York. So between that and between writing it, I just knew this story really well. And it was a very artistically rewarding experience producing it, but since it wasn't did it myself with some help, but we didn't have a major company behind us, so we didn't get the kind of turnout that I wanted, and we didn't really get any reviews despite having a press agent, and the other actor who did it with me, you know, have like 8 Broadway shows. So I'm like, oh man, people, you know, he's very well known. Like, people come out and see this. And we just opened at a bad time. And so kind of the production came and went. And
right.
Relatedly, it got, you know, some recognition. Indie Theater Now found it and put it in their Best Place of the Year anthology. So it really did go more smoothly than I anticipated when I first had the idea.
Did you say Indie Theater Now was what picked it up?
Yeah, Indie Theater Now is in their Best Plays of the Year, their 2015 anthology.
I'm pretty sure I've used them before.
They initially asked to publish it, and then a month later I got an email from Martin Dennis saying, I really love this play. And he first sent an email when I sent it, he said, PM will publish it. I really like it, but I just figured that's what he would say to everyone. And then 2 months later I got an email saying, I really love this play. It's more people need to know about it. We want to put it in our Best of the Year anthology.
Nice.
So that was, like, so grateful to you for that.
No, I just recognize it because I've directed something from there. I had a years and years ago when Chris and Lauren and all of us were still in school. We had a I had an advanced directing course that used Indie Theater Now as a source for its the plays for the advanced directors, and it was where I came across a very powerful show called Lovers Leapt, about two people who it's basically the two people falling from the Twin Towers and having a 15-minute conversation about the life they could have had. It's a very, very powerful, moving piece, but it was that catalog was just overwhelming of all the choices of wonderful plays. So that is fantastic that you are a part of that.
Yeah, that's why it was so nice to be in that anthology, because it narrows it down from hundreds to, you know, those 12 plays that they published that year. So that was really exciting.
Nice.
Very cool.
So what can you tell us about your pieces? Like I said, I don't want to invite you to share anything you're not comfortable sharing pre-release of Suicide Stories, but what can you tell about your individual pieces for people coming into Suicide Stories?
Chris, you want to start off?
Sure.
It's just
sure.
Three,
okay.
Just three out there.
Right, so yeah, so I've been working on my elevator pitch for it. So Museum Bar is this sort of dreamscape journey. Follows protagonist as he essentially goes through this dreamscape, looking for something, not really quite sure what it is. He thinks he's going in trying to get a drink. That's how the play starts out. He goes into this bar. He really needs a drink. A lot of weird shit starts happening. The bar just starts to transform. At one point, he's even transferred into this other realm, so to speak. But all in search of this one thing. And then as he realizes what that thing is, or as he comes to like realize more about that thing, he finds himself running away. So it's sort of like the grapple between
Well, if that
setting
was
out for something and then realizing that what you want might not actually be what you thought it was, and having to readjust.
Knowing what that means, that is a beautiful way to describe it. That is knowing and not knowing what it means. That is a brilliant way to say that.
Thank you.
You got it. And what about you, David? What can you say
I would,
in advance?
try to hesitate to say much because I mentioned that I wanted to use this piece to fulfill my initial idea I had for the full-length play.
Yeah.
And the initial idea of the full-length play that just didn't work for a number of reasons was to have a surprise twist. Maybe not quite at the end, but maybe three-fourths through. And the goal here is for this, you know, for the version that we'll see in Philadelphia is that, you know, that surprise is the big reveal.
Gotcha.
So without
yeah.
trying to give that away, I think the main thing is just, I don't think we have enough empathy in our society. There's a great line from the musical Hair. I don't know if I can get it right. But basically, the last song, like, this image of people, you know, walking by, you know, people, homeless people, people in need of help. If it's the lyric is walking proudly in their winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation. So I could have sung it, but I'll save you that. That image always stuck.
Give me a chance to learn it. I will get that in.
Temporarily. You'd always just see on the, in the subway, in the street, people who really needed help, and it would break my heart if I didn't give them money. I would feel so guilty. And I would look around, and everyone just walked by on their phones, couldn't get, you know, regardless of whether or not you're going to give money or, you know, this person is there partly because of their own decisions. It has to, to me, it's like it has to break your heart, and for so many people, it just seem not to. So this play, I think, really takes a subject that most people say is not worthy of empathy and tries to give it empathy. And that's not to excuse any behavior, but to make it see the humanity even in the worst people. So that is what I think that sums up, you know, what I hope people take away from it. Without giving too much away.
Fair. Very fair. I realize I put you both on the spot there with that. And I guess the one of the last structure questions I want to ask, we've been talking a lot, and to me, this is one of the things I'm most excited about and stressed about because I'm in charge of it. But we've talked in the last couple episodes about the unique way we're presenting these stories, that it kind of started out a while ago when we first started talking about it. I remember the idea was somewhere in a world that exists between like Laramie Project and Vagina Monologues, where it's true accounts, but presented individually. And as it's grown, we now have these amazing playwrights, these fantastic creative stories, that are not just being shown by people on a stage talking. So I guess I'd like to ask Chris, as someone on the development side of this, and also David, as someone who has joined in on this amazing process, what are your thoughts on the challenges of presenting these stories through different art mediums?
Well, I mean, I guess it's kind of just like seeing which one fits best, right? You know, because, I mean, theater is already like an art form in and of itself. So I guess like taking that to an extra level and like and bringing these other art mediums into it, I guess is, and seeing which one will like do these pieces the most honor without detracting from the pieces, you know? So they also let the pieces speak for themselves. I think that might be one of the biggest, one of the biggest challenges. I don't know, people might have their own opinions on that. I know for mine, it was kind of a big thing, you know, starting to write it, was trying to figure out what medium it was and how I was going to play with that. Because Lauren and I, we went back and forth on what the actual medium was for their became clarity of what it was. And I think that was about like the second or first or second after the first or second draft, we both had clarity, and realized that, oh wait, this is actually how this paper should be presented. And that was really kind of a beautiful moment when that did happen, because it seemed like all the pieces just kind of fell together, and we knew that this was the best way to present this play.
And what about you?
Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. No, it does. It absolutely does. I guess I'll just turn things over to David too, because he. What was your initial reaction to joining this project and learning about our vision for how we want to present the stories?
So I was very excited with the idea of the museum exhibit like feel. And I thought my piece would work perfectly for that, and I thought the piece would really work for the monologue, and then Lauren threw at me that they wanted to film a piece, and they thought mine would be a fit. So that's kind of been exciting and terrifying. Exciting because I could really see working on film, and then somewhat terrifying, the great thing about theater is the playwright is, the decision maker in the medium. Obviously, I love working with directors and they always make my plays better, but if someone's delivering, a monologue, the words are pretty much paramount, whereas in the film, I'm really excited to see what Cameron does with it. And then it's going to be shown to one person at a time. So I have no idea how that's going to work. I hope people are going to want to, be invested enough to stay with that piece for 10 minutes, because it really is
it's beautiful.
A journey.
Yeah.
So, I think that sums it up. Exciting and terrifying just because it feels a lot, there are so many other factors now besides the writing. So I'm really, but I'm a big believer that we need to try new things. Just to, keep doing the same thing in terms of reaching audiences and experimenting form gets kind of boring. So I'm excited to see what happens.
That kind of just reminds me of a joke I saw on Facebook. David, you reminded me of a theater group going like, now in this political climate, it's the time to do something new. Does Shakespeare slightly worse? Like,
yeah,
that kind of thing. Like, but yeah, no. You are absolutely right. Like, that is what I think of when I think of doing something new, doing something that matters and something that's meaningful. That kind of leads me into the way I'd like to wrap up all of our playwright discussions, which is, why should people come see this piece? I think we've given a lot of reasons in this episode alone, but just from the playwrights themselves, what are your thoughts on the relevance of our piece and what our mission is to do with this piece of art?
You should come to see David Meyer's film. But yeah. I mean, it's really there's so much. I feel very grateful being in the position that I am, that I've been able to be so close to this project and sort of see everyone's all the work that everyone's putting in. And it's it's just really kind of incredible. And there are a lot of really moving pieces. There are also some funny pieces. So this isn't just going to be like a whole 2 hours of wading through depression. You'll have some laughs. You'll also see some things that will really make you take a step back and sort of think differently about things, which for me is the coolest thing. That's my favorite experience, when I can go into a piece of theater and come out of it thinking differently. I think that's something that everyone will take away from this.
Right.
And I would echo similar thoughts, just knowing all the artists involved. I just think you're going to come away from this just with, I love 10-minute plays. They might be my favorite format. And just with all the innovative ideas that I hear being talked about for this production, I guess my best endorsement is that I wish I could see it. So I moved to California in January. People keep saying, oh, career? Like, honestly, career was only about 30% of it. I just needed sunshine and warmth and trees in my life all year long because they make me so happy. But I really miss the people in New York, and Christian, you are one of them. And I am really disappointed that I can't see this play. And I think that's more important coming from me, because if everything goes well, I will be able to see mine. It's going to be a film. So it's not, oh, the player just wants to come and see his work perform. I have been so excited by this idea that I want to come see the final product, and it is killing me that I can't. So I think that speaks for why other people can come to see it. You know, I would not go to see something unless I really wanted to be there. And it just sounds really exciting. I just can't wait to hear how it goes.
Maybe we can G-chat you into the...
I would love that. I'm
yeah, I was just going to say, I forgot... And what a bad podcast host I am. I forgot until this moment that you were our California playwright. All the other interviews I've been coordinating this week have been New York or Philly, so I hope the time of this recording has not inconvenienced you in any way.
Yeah, the time worked out great. Actually, and this is the last thing I'll say, I'm sure I've talked enough. One of my favorite things I love about living in California is being 3 hours behind. I don't know why, but I just, that phenomenon of, oh, you know, for you, like, all, like, the big news of the day and all those things have broke, I think is outside of the acting I'm doing here, both in terms of, you know, I still work remotely for a company in New York. Most people, almost everyone I deal with is in New York. So it's this weird thing where I get, you know, get up, especially I tend to get up later in the morning, like 9:30, damn, like half the day's already over on the East Coast. It's a very weird phenomenon, but I really like it.
Well, then let me wrap up our side of the interview. Thank you again so much for coming in, or coming on, since we're doing this via the web. But if I could ask one more just wrap-up question. This is a good one I've been going with a lot lately. If you could share a drink with any character in any play, who would it be and why? Bonus points if you tell me what drink you would share with them.
Chris, why don't you go first?
I gotta think about this for a second.
Chris, you know my questions are weird.
This is bad because it's just another, you know, plug into Suicide Stories. I would definitely want to sit down and have a drink with the character in David's play. So see,
what a cliffhanger, Chris!
Know what that would be like.
All right. I'll take that. My answer, so I was literally just in New York for 36 hours. I flew back to see the closing weekend of my play at CATF, and I came back to New York, and my mom really wanted to see a show, and we went to see Hello, Dolly! With Donna Murphy.
Donna Murphy's in Hello, Dolly?
Anymore. But like, that's how I became involved in theater. I love musicals. And I just had the greatest time, and I would want to have a drink with Donna Murphy's Dolly.
How long has Donna Murphy been in Hello, Dolly! And no one's told me?
What?
How long has Donna Murphy been in Hello, Dolly! And no one has told me this?
Oh, you have to go. So I never think, you know, theater's become so ridiculously expensive. And I get, you know, $100 now is like a discount price. But we got $100 tickets, and they were amazing seats. And I have to say, even though I'm in a money crunch, well, yeah.
What artist is not?
Paid for it. But even if I hadn't been in a money crunch, it was worth every cent.
No.
So if you, I it was really, I can't overstate how good it was. So go see it.
You know, funnily enough, Donna Murphy, when I first saw the movie Tangled, the Rapunzel Disney movie, I thought the way she played Rapunzel's mother reminded me a lot of the witch from Into the Woods. And all I could think was how wonderful she would be as the witch from Into the Woods. And the next year, she played the witch in Into the Woods.
I've seen her in a lot. I saw her in Wonderful Town. I saw her in The King and I back in the 90s. And this, she was just as good as Wonderful Town, but the show's so much better that she shines even more. So I can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, I don't know if it was the last episode or it was a couple episodes ago. I said that I would share a drink with Mame from Mame, but I think Dolly can hold her own.
Very, very well.
Dolly can hold her own as well. I would totally drink with Dolly. If you get Dolly and Mame in the same room, that'd be fine.
Right.
Well, thank you both so much for coming on and talking with me today.
Thank you, Robert, for having me.
This was so much fun. I was telling someone the other day, the best part about theater is the people that you meet doing it. For all the frustrations and difficulty, that's my favorite part. So I had a total blast.
And if those of you who've been following the stories and updates of this wonderful piece of art are interested, tickets are finally available. You can find the ticket link on our website, elephantroomproductions.com, and in the description of this episode. Thank you again for listening today. We will see you all next time.